Commission on Human Rights. Few doubt that they would also be condemned by the World Trade Organization, WTO, but Washington has made it clear that it would disregard any WTO ruling, keeping to the rogue state principle. To mention another illustration of contemporary relevance, when Indonesia invaded East Timor in 1975, it was ordered to withdraw at once by the UN Security Council, but to no avail. The reasons were explained in his 1978 memoirs by UN Ambassador Daniel Patrick Moynihan. The United States wished things to turn out as they did, and worked to bring this about. The Department of State desired that the United Nations prove utterly ineffective in whatever measures it undertook. This task was given to me, and I carried it forward with no inconsiderable success. He goes on to report that, within 2 months, some 60,000 people had been killed. The numbers reached about 200,000 within a few years, thanks to increasing military support from the U.S., joined by Britain as atrocities peaked in 1978. Their support continued through 1999, as COPASIS commandos, armed and trained by the U.S., organized Operation Clean Sweep from January, killing 3,000 to 5,000 people by August, according to credible church sources, and later expelling 750,000 people, 85% of the population, and virtually destroying the country. Throughout, the Clinton administration kept to its stand that it is the responsibility of the government of Indonesia, and we don't want to take it away from them. Under mounting domestic and international, primarily Australian, pressure, Washington finally indicated to the Indonesian generals that the game was over. They quickly reversed course, announcing their withdrawal, an indication of the latent power that had always been available. U.S. support for Indonesian aggression and slaughter was almost reflexive. The murderous and corrupt General Suharto was our kind of guy, the Clinton administration explained, as he had been ever since he supervised a Rwanda-style massacre in 1965 that elicited unrestrained euphoria in the U.S. So he remained, while compiling one of the worst human rights records of the modern era. Though he fell from grace in 1997 when he lost control and was dragging his feet on harsh International Monetary Fund, IMF, austerity programs. The pattern is familiar. Another grand killer, Saddam Hussein, was also supported through his worst atrocities, changing status only when he disobeyed or misunderstood orders. There is a long series of similar illustrations: Trujillo, Mobutu, Marcos, Duvalier, Noriega, and many others. Crimes are not of great consequence. Disobedience is. The 1965 mass murders, mostly of landless peasants, ensured that Indonesia would not be a threat of the Cuban variety, an infection that would sweep westward through South Asia, as George Kennan had warned in 1948 when he took the problem of Indonesia to be the most crucial issue in the struggle with the Kremlin, which was scarcely visible. The massacre was also taken to be a justification of Washington's wars in Indochina, which had strengthened the resolve of the generals to cleanse their society. Rendering the UN utterly ineffective has been routine procedure since the organization fell out of control with decolonization. One index is Security Council votes, covering a wide range of issues. From the 1960s, the U.S. has been far in the lead, Britain second, France a distant third. General Assembly votes are similar. The more general principle is that if an international organization does not serve the interests that govern U.S. policy, there is little reason to allow it to survive. The reasons for dismissing international norms were elaborated by the Reagan administration when the World Court was considering Nicaragua's charges against the U.S. Secretary of State George Shultz derided those who advocate utopian, legalistic means like outside mediation, the United Nations, and the World Court, while ignoring the power element of the equation. State Department legal advisor Abram Sofier explained that most of the world cannot be counted on to share our view, and the majority often opposes the United States on important international questions. Accordingly, we must reserve to ourselves the power to determine how we will act and which matters fall essentially within the domestic jurisdiction of the United States, as determined by the United States. In this case,